thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Faltestach, you are very welcome to episode 49 of thatgreatbusinessshow.com, the show you, the listeners, say is Ireland's best business podcast. So thanks very much for that. I'm Conal O'Mora, and you can follow me and my unusual interests, mainly business, sometimes cars, often random, on Twitter, where I am at Conal O'M. We're posting this episode on Friday, the 27th of August, so happy birthday today to our digital marketing guru, Afric. As the floodwaters of COVID recede and businesses see the damage left behind, your ever-helpful business podcast has an expert joining us to tell you of a new way to save small, ailing businesses, of which, unfortunately, there will be many. It may not be yours, but it could be that of a pal, so stay listening. And we have a woman who paints grass for a living. We only bring you the most interesting businesses after all. And we're joined by a banker turned chicken stalker who uses something called robotics as a service to make his chickens happier and healthier. That's all coming up in the next hour or so. But first, being digital, we can track everything you, the listeners, are listening to. So we're delighted to see that you're still downloading southern.ie's Dave O'Hora, who gave us that Facebook masterclass on episode 43. And not surprisingly, we're also still getting a huge reaction to the Queen of Primark, Breege O'Donoghue, and her one-hour retailing MBA course that she gave us on episode 46. And do remember that this episode and previous episodes of That Great Business Show are only made possible thanks to that great sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, makers of the world's best shaving oil.
That Great Business Show.
Today's first item on this show is very important for any small business that has hit the doo-doo after the COVID shutdown. You may not be aware of something called SCARP, but it is very, very important that you do learn about it. SCARP is the company's rescue process for small and micro companies 2021 Act. And it has recently been signed into law. The primary objective of the process is in line with examinership to save enterprises and any jobs provided by them. However, it's more accessible and cost-effective than examinership, specifically for SMEs. And who better to talk to us through the process than Neil Hughes, Managing Partner at Baker Tilly Ireland. Neil Hughes, you are most welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks a lot, Colin. Great to be back.
When I was making sure that I got your right title, I found out something about you. You are head of restructuring for Baker Tilly Southeast Europe.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, that's right.
Where is Southeast Europe? You are Southeast Europe?
Well, it's funny, a bit of a story behind that, because I was at a conference in 2016 in Rio de Janeiro, and I got speaking to the managing partner of the Southeast Europe practice, which includes Cyprus, Greece, Romania, and so on. And those countries down there, they've got quite a few restructuring problems. It's not just ourselves in Ireland that have had restructuring problems in the last few years. But coincidentally, the examinership process had literally been introduced in Cyprus just a couple of months previous. And I got speaking to this guy and we were like kindred spirits. We were a long way from home, as you can imagine, but two island nations and they've had their problems like ourselves. So we just got chatting and I said, really, I should come down to see you guys because, you know, this examinership business, it really works very well.
That sun thing is very attractive as well.
Yeah, it could have been. I could have been talking to the managing partner of Estonia or Latvia or whatever, but it just happened to be Cyprus and they happened to introduce examinership in 2015. So I explained to him that it's been a huge success. So I did go down. We started talking. We started doing some cases together and one thing led to another and they asked me to lead the restructuring practice in Southeast Europe. So I've been in a lot of the countries down there, really interesting part of the world, and some great people, the Cypriot people, they remind me a lot of the Irish people, you know, the island nation.
Lovely place. I've been there.
Beautiful place. Beautiful place. Like a home away from home for me now. I've been down there 25, 30 times.
Wow.
So, it's been a real success for us. So, I enjoy it.
But that's not going to teach us anything about SCARP. Tell me everything you know about SCARP.
The SCARP process, yeah.
Say 20 minutes.
Well, this is a brand new process and it's very rare that something so fundamental would happen in the sort of the business landscape in Ireland like this. And if you want to look for some comparisons, you know, people anybody who knows anything about law would know that the 1963 Companies Act would have brought in a lot of things in Ireland, the first restructuring mechanisms. 1990 is when examinership kicked off, and now 2021 is when the SCARP legislation has been brought in. So it's kind of once in a career that this kind of thing will happen. And obviously, it's a really good time for this to be brought in because there are so many businesses now that have been badly affected by the pandemic. I mean, retail and hospitality springs immediately to mind, but obviously, look, there's lots and lots of others. And so the government, in their wisdom, they decided, okay, when we unwind the subsidies that have been given that have kept a lot of businesses alive, in fact, kept a lot of zombie companies alive, actually, which we might come back to a little later on in our chat, we need to make sure that there's some mechanism that businesses that are struggling can easily access. Nobody wants to go to court. Examinership is associated with going to the High Court.
And that costs money.
Yeah, and immediately you're talking about legal fees, even just to get in the door. So they said, okay, well, how can this be brought in to be sort of like a voluntary process that it's handled all within the one office, the process advisor, as it's called, capital P, capital A. So the process advisor is destined now to handle the vast majority of these SME businesses. And the vast, vast majority of companies will qualify for this because the rules are less than 12 million turnover or less than 50 employees. There is another rule, which means it's basically your balance sheet has to be less than 6 million. This is the EU qualification for a small or micro company. But if you have a balance sheet of...
A large company in Irish terms.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You're right there. But if a business has a balance sheet of 6 million or more, it's not going to be talking about restructuring or SCARP. Let's call a spade, they can refinance easily and move on. So really, you're just talking one of those two, either less than 50 employees or less than 12 million turnover. And if that's the case, you qualify for SCARP. The name, by the way, just to talk about the name, there is SCARP isn't mentioned anywhere in the legislation, but it's one of these things that it has just stuck. You know, if you associate normally the word SCARP, it's associated with a mountain.
Yeah.
The side of a mountain, I think, actually.
It's so, an escarpment.
It's short of escarpment. Exactly. So it obviously, in the legislators' minds, I think they haven't discouraged the expression because it was originally the small company administrative rescue process, or SCARP. But now the administrative is gone. They've changed the wording around. But I think SCARP is here to stay. So if you hear SCARP, you're talking about scaling a mountain, and that's what it feels like.
And this is the first time that people may have heard about SCARP on this podcast.
Yeah.
So talk me through, because hopefully we have many, many thousands of those SMEs listening to us. What does it actually mean, say financially?
Yeah, sure.
If I'm being forced into the courts, it'll cost me...
Well, 10 to 15K maybe just to get off the ground, say for.
And so
that's not for large companies really. But this process now, it's intended for your SME business. So this could be a retail store owner, it could be a restaurant, a cafe, business owner that finds themselves, they've reopened after the pandemic. They find perhaps that the level of business that they're doing is much less than it was pre-pandemic. They may have built up a level of liabilities prior to the pandemic, which now they're looking at. And it is looking like a SCARP. The side of a mountain that they're looking at.
Because just here, you were talking about the level of rent arrears, which are very chunky altogether.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Retail Association or Retail Excellence,
isn't it?
They have announced, I think, that they 80% of retailers have built up some level of arrears over the course of the pandemic. Not a hugely surprising metric, actually, when you think about it, seeing as most of them were closed for a very long period of time to keep the rest of us safe. There is a mountain of debt out there that does have to be dealt with. Some will be able to deal with it.
But others may not. My first question was, how much will it cost relative to going to the courts?
The SCARP process?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be, there is no one answer for that because you're talking about different companies, different types of companies, different complexity.
But so, cheaper.
But from the point of view of getting past the very first stage, there's always legal fees associated with examinership because you have to petition the courts. You need an independent expert's report. In SCARP, the idea is that there is no legal fees, that there is no court. So there should be no immediate upfront cost. There is a process advisor is going to have to be engaged to run that process. But the initial upfront cost, that should be done away with. And that's the key difference. That's one of the key differences. And I'll come back to another one, which is the control of the process, okay, which in examinership, it's a far more open process whereby it's advertised publicly. The courts are a public forum. Obviously, anybody can walk into any court, including reporters, as you know. So the idea of a process, the process advisor would run it within his or her office. Okay, so it's a much more private process. And what we're hearing now directly from SMEs that we're speaking to is that they much prefer that type of concept.
Well, naturally, yeah.
Because they want, people are private, you know, and people, this is a very difficult time in people's lives. We need to be cognizant of that. We need to respect that. And so people certainly are thinking, they're tending towards SCARP if they need to restructure because of that reason. Also, SCARP, it's destined to be a much shorter process than examinership. Examinership now can last up to 150 days, just 5 months. The SCARP process, it's envisaged that it would be done in a maximum of 70, but that the scheme would be in place by day 42. That's 6 weeks. So the swiftness of the process, which also reduces costs, that's also attractive to people. But one of the main reasons why a lot of SMEs that are struggling, that we're speaking to currently, like this process, is the fact that they would perceive what's called interloper risk in an examinership, whereby somebody maybe with deep pockets comes in and says, well, I would like to be an investor in that business, I'd like to be in an examinership process, for example. And this, okay, it doesn't happen very often in examinership, but there is theoretically a risk of an interloper, in inverted commas. But under the SCARP process, because it's 42 days, because it's all handled privately within the process advisor's office, the perception currently is that it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, for anybody to come in from the outside for that business. I actually don't think that that's what the government brought it in for either. It was not to create investment opportunities for investors with deep pockets to pick up small SMEs around the country. That's not what SCARP was brought in for by the government. It was with a view to trying to make sure that viable enterprises can survive and thereby the livelihoods of the people working there are protected. That's clearly what the legislation is intended for. And okay, there has been no cases yet because the enabling legislation is only coming out now in early autumn. The legislation has been passed, but there are certain things that the Department of Jobs has to bring in order to enable this legislation. And that is due to happen, we understand, in a short number of weeks. We were on to the department last week just to check that. So we think that the first SCARPs, in inverted commas, we're likely to see them now in the course of the month of late September, October, and certainly early 22. Because at the end of this year, as you know, Conal, all of the subsidies should have been at that stage unwound, particularly the wage subsidies. The CRSS is already gone. That was due to help people that closed their doors over the course of the pandemic. But 2022, every SME in Ireland is going to have to stand back up. And then we're going to see at that stage about how many will be able to stay standing or how many may be liable to fall over.
And I did compare it to a flood. When the floodwaters recede, then you see the damage that is done.
That's right. I mean, that's an apt analogy. It's quite extraordinary what's happening at the minute. We spoke earlier about, you know, the risk that there are a lot of zombie SMEs kind of walking around our economy. But the number of insolvencies, say in 2012, 2013, they were running at around 500 a quarter, about 2,000 in the year, but companies becoming insolvent. Now, this is obviously the worst period of the initial recession, the 2009, 2010 recession. And the outcome from that was seen in 2011, 12, 13. Okay. And unemployment topped out in, I think it was February 2012, 15.2%. So that was in and around the worst time in our economy. Some dark, dark days. You'll remember those days. It was running at about 500 a quarter insolvencies. That's running at 50 a quarter now. There's a 90% fall in insolvencies in the economy from peak to trough. Now, that's an extraordinary number to think about. In the middle of a pandemic with so many businesses closed, with the footfall down so much in relation to so many companies. And it can't be a real picture. The point is, it just can't be real. There are, and we're speaking to them, I know it's not real because we are speaking to them every day. There are businesses that have just kicked the can up the road as far as they can because they just cannot deal with this mountain of debt that they've brought in. They're going to have to deal with it sometime. You know, the revenue are going to have to be paid. Anything that was warehoused, it does have to be dealt with. The business may be constrained and there may be a requirement for a scheme with those creditors. And if there's a requirement for a scheme, that's where one of the options is going to be this SCARP process. And that's why it's so important. I'm delighted actually that we've a chance to talk about it because it arms the SME owner with another option because we have to be in the hope business. I'm a firm believer that if you're in a position like we are, whereby you have a chance to speak in the media about something, we need to be in the hope business. We need to be positive. And there's a huge amount of despair that's out there. That despair never has a voice. It never actually, because people who are in that situation, they don't like to come on the radio.
Of course. Yeah.
They don't like to be speaking publicly. But yet, quietly, people are in despair. And we see it sometimes in our boardroom. We would see people come in and you can see it in their eyes, you know, and to be able to give them options, I think it's hugely powerful. That's what SCARP is.
Talk me through an example of somebody, a company, we'll call it a shoe shop to be different today. Okay. A shoe shop has built up 100,000 in arrears just on rent.
Yeah, so it's got 100,000 of arrears in rent. It's back open and maybe business is coming back slowly but surely. But there's no real way of paying that 100,000 to the landlord. But in addition to that, there's another 100,000 of tax arrears, the VAT, which was warehoused and it's in there at 0%. But now next year, it's going to have to be confronted. And on top of that, then there's the key suppliers. Those suppliers are getting paid COD currently because of the large arrears that have been built up. That could be another, to keep it simple, another 100,000 that's there. And then there might be one or two other creditors to do it. Rates, possibly, which were before the pandemic, that would have been forgiven during the pandemic, and a few other things.
So when you say just on the rents, the rates, when you say they're forgiven, they ain't forgiven, are they? It's sitting there.
Yeah, well, no, some of the earlier ones would have been sitting there, but some of them actually could have been waived from the time
when
they were obliged to close.
But your VAT has not gone away?
No, all of that is sitting there. So they will come in and say, right, we're now reopened. We're hoping we're going to get a good Christmas. But we are going to need an absolute bonanza Christmas to be able to deal with 400,000 odd of arrears that's there.
It's unrealistic, actually,
and
isn't it?
You say our turnover is down because there's less people on the street and everybody's moved online and they've had to move online. So now they get their shoes from Amazon. And now we're here, small business. We want to save the 5-6 jobs in our... Okay, and you can multiply, by the way, those jobs across the economy, and you're going to have hundreds of thousands of jobs across the economy. But they say, okay, well, look, we would like to save our business. We could be viable. We can make a small profit every year, but we can't pay off 400 grand of debt. It's not possible. So we're facing liquidation. We are very small business for examinership. The concept of going and petitioning the courts, very unattractive, you know. But we do need help. We need a scheme with these creditors. It may involve a payment over time. It may involve a reduction in the debts to just a percentage. Might be a small percentage for some creditors, might be larger for the revenue because they're preferential. But we need somebody to advise us on how to put that together and to take it to the creditors and get agreement. And that's what SCARP's all about. So the practical reality is somebody in that situation would come in to a process advisor, to somebody like ourselves or somebody else, and will say, right, how do we approach this? What does the scheme look like? You get some advice, and then the process kicks off with the paperwork that is now being finalized in the department. It is kicked off. The creditors are all advised that the business is under this new process, that there's a process advisor in place. It is hoped that there will not be massive objections from the likes of landlords or trade creditors or whatever, because that could drive the process into the courts. And there is that provision there that in the event of, you know, serious objections, it may have to be heard by a judge, somebody who says we are unfairly prejudiced by this Mr. Process Advisor, so we need a hearing, a court hearing.
And what would being unfairly prejudiced kind of imply, that they're not top of the queue?
Yeah, it would mean that, for example, a creditor saying, well, look, you've offered us now, we're going to get 20% back on our debt. We're certain that if the business is wound up and a liquidator is appointed, we're going to get 40%. Mm-hmm. We're being unfairly prejudiced by your scheme.
Okay.
And we would like a judge to tell us that we're correct or to hear us out. And those are the situations. Now, but it is hoped, because the vast majority, and I can tell you because we have so much examinership experience, there's so few creditors vote against a scheme that's looking to save a business. You know, and thankfully, we live in an enlightened economy whereby the vast, vast majority of business people recognize that a going concern outcome is much better than the crash outcome, the winding up outcome. And so therefore, in our experience, common sense prevails and the business survives. And we would hope that that's what we're going to likely to see now in SCARP, that there'll be very few applications to court to determine some of these issues. But there's always that possibility, and that gives you the authority to actually take it forward and make the scheme binding.
So what is happening is a write-down of debt.
A write-down or pushing it off. It might be a combination of time to pay and potentially a write-down of debt as well, yes.
So if you multiply my shoe shop out by 1,000 or 10,000 shops, somebody somewhere is going to take an awful beating,
yep.
Be that a pension fund, property owners,
that's right,
etc. What happens to them?
Well, that is a past issue. It's an historic issue at this stage, and it's called the pandemic. So that issue has already unfolded. So if a business owes 400 grand and it has the capacity to make a profit of 20 grand a year, the losses are already there. They just have not actually come out yet. They haven't been declared yet. So there is, unfortunately, there is going to have to be a recalibration of balance sheets across the economy post-pandemic. I don't think it has happened yet.
I was going to ask, do you ever do a little back of the envelope calculation? Somewhere, sometime, somebody has to take an enormous hit.
Well, it may not be as big as perhaps people fear, because the government, the taxpayer, has already backfilled a huge amount of it. So to the tune of, what is it, 25 billion in 20 and 25 billion in 21.
Well, let's put it another way. That's going to be paid for by taxes someday.
It is. It's going to be paid probably by the grandchildren of the people in this room, for example. I mean, it's such a huge, enormous figure. I mean, we are into, it has to stop, by the way, because it's la-la land economics now, that you can just keep on, you know, you can throw 50 billion onto the national debt and nobody really talk about it. Actually, well, how is that going to be paid back? Okay, you can inflate your way out of that. And I'm not an economist, okay, but there is going to be an element of inflation will help us over the coming years. But I don't think it's going to pay the whole amount back.
Don't think so.
50 billion, that's 50,000 million euros. So that's very serious. But that is, there's no reality to that sort of economics continuing forever, as Greece has found and so on and various other countries. So that is going to, I've no doubt, I think Pascal Donohue is a fairly conservative sort of fella anyway. So if he is there at the end of the year, I would imagine we are going to see the unwinding of those subsidies.
What else should an SME know about this SCARP Act? Because I was going to call it legislation, it's now the Act.
Yeah, it's the Act that's in. I think what they should know is that this is a six-week period is what people are talking about. There's a short, sharp, SCARP is what we are talking about. A short, sharp restructuring phase for that business, whereby they remain in control. The business owners remain in control. They employ a process advisor to put that scheme together. And at the end of that, the idea would be that the business has to be demonstrably sustainable. And the onus of proof is on the process advisor to be able to demonstrate to all of the stakeholders, the suppliers, shareholders, everybody, this is now on a sustainable path, taking into account the new sort of macroeconomic picture and customer behavior, consumer behaviors. And it's a chance, it's a second chance. This is a good example of what the EU referred to as second chance insolvency, whereby honest, hardworking borrowers or business owners are given a second chance. And it is one of the EU freedoms that business owners, since the directive came in a couple of years ago, that business owners are entitled to a second chance. And that's what this is. It's a second chance for business owners. And I just hope that a lot of business owners will, you know, having listened to ourselves speaking today or listened to other commentary in the media, that they will realize that there is that option available to them. Because the more people are talking about it, the more normal it becomes. And you see just how many businesses are struggling. People are not alone. They are not alone in the situation they are in. There are tens, if not hundreds of thousands of businesses in the same situation. So if we can deliver that little bit of hope today, I think it'll be a positive 15 or 20 minute chat.
Good. Legislation normally is based on precedent from somewhere else. Has somebody tried this before, some other country, do you know, and has it worked?
Yeah, it works really well. I mean, for example, the voluntary administration process in Australia, be very, very similar. And it works all the time, very similar to Chapter 11, but there is a court involvement in Chapter 11, although it's much more straightforward and much more routine in the US. So for that reason, about a quarter of all businesses that become insolvent enter Chapter 11 in America, whereas in Ireland, only 2% of businesses enter examinership or have historically entered examinership. So I think there's a far more open, sort of transparent sort of culture in the US, which I think we definitely should get there, because it's nobody's fault. The pandemic is nobody's fault. So people shouldn't take that guilt factor, you know, which we've seen regularly with SME owners, the pride factor, which particularly in male SME owners, we found is a big, big issue, which is perhaps unhelpful in terms of trying to fix the problems that are there. So, but there are international precedents, but we are seen, Ireland is seen as leaders in terms of restructuring. You know, it's no reason that, for example, Norwegian Air would do their restructuring in Ireland.
That's a turnaround.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Norwegian Air, but the fact that we're actually leading, because we were so far behind at one stage.
Well, absolutely. But no, we are seen as, in terms of company law issues, like that's why, for example, we spoke about Cyprus earlier. That's the reason that the EU copied the Irish legislation and brought it in, because they said, no, actually, that's a very enlightened way to approach things from a European perspective. We're not going to copy the UK system, the German system. We're going to copy the Ireland system for Cyprus. And now with the new directive I just mentioned, they're going to do that around the rest of Eastern Europe. And that's very positive. So no, there are those examples around the world. They do work. And I've no doubt that, you know, given a fair chance, SCARP will work too.
That's very good news. So first steps for the SME owner who is in the doo-doo?
Yeah, we'll contact an advisor, contact a restructuring advisor. And
Baker Tilly, I believe, is open for business, isn't it?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Conal. But listen, I mean, obviously, look, we would consider ourselves to be at the forefront of this sort of work.
That's why you're here.
So certainly we'd be able to help anybody. But the key thing is to talk to somebody who you would trust and get talking about what does SCARP, how could this work for us? So, because people need, they need light at the end of the tunnel. It doesn't work. If you think that you're just working for creditors, and there's nothing in it for yourself or your family or whatever, it doesn't work. You're more than likely going to do something else. Okay, and that business then will be lost. The jobs in that business will be lost. The community, the benefit that business has to the community will be lost. The shoe shop, for example, just to give somebody selling children's shoes in a community. That's what we're trying to protect here with this. So, take advice, consider the options, weigh them up. And if the SCARP is the right process for you, well, then certainly our recommendation would be it's got a really good chance of working for a business that's suitable.
Final question, and I think you know what I'm going to ask you because we ask every guest this question.
Oh, yeah.
Who would, nothing to do with SCARP now, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Oh, yes, okay. So, yes. Well, I tell you, when it comes to recruiting people into Baker Tilly, we've got a couple of key kind of principles that we would look to. And the first one is positivity. Now, you're probably not surprised by that after our conversation here because
it's very, very, very important.
Absolutely. You do need to be so positive in terms of the situations that we come across every day. There's any number, you know, there's 15 problems you can come up with for a business that's in there, right? We try and look past that. We say, okay, well, give us the one good reason why this business should be saved. And that kind of turns the conversation. So positivity certainly is something we'd be hugely, work ethic, very important for somebody, okay? And then also the ability to engage with people. Okay, so the ability to, especially post-pandemic, you know, once we get past Teams, task completion on Teams or Zoom, you know, that whole world of tick, 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 tick.
I hate it.
I'm so done with Teams and Zoom.
That's why we never do it on That Great Business Show, I can tell you.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to listen to it.
No, listen. I mean, look, frankly, it doesn't work. I mean, most people's business is about relationship building, and that means getting out in front of your
Neil Hughes, who is your hire in a heartbeat?
I'm struck by is, you know, our recent Olympians, the gold medal Olympians that we have, they would display, a lot of those guys and girls would display the sort of characteristics I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're obviously hardworking, magnificent work ethic, okay? But also the positivity they showed.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're able to engage. You can just imagine somebody like that, the effect, the ripple effect it would have throughout your workforce. So if you've got an Olympic gold medal, and you would like a job in restructuring, please give us a shout. Now, I'm being slightly facetious, but you know what I mean as regards the type.
I have never had such a long answer to what is it. Yeah, still haven't given me a name.
Oh, it's actually an actual name.
An actual name.
Okay. One of the guys, one of the Donovan brothers.
Okay. They'll do.
Yeah.
The bearded lad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I know he's in medical, he's a very senior kind of medical qualifications, but yeah. Paul Donovan, there's the answer,
okay,
Dennis Gibberine.
Listen, thank you so much, Neil Hughes, Managing Partner at Baker Tilly Ireland. And anybody who wants to find you will find you, as I say, at Baker Tilly. And his name is Neil Hughes. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Colin.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie.
De Facto backs your business, so please back them by buying the world's best shaving oil, defactoshave.com. And as creator Tom Murphy keeps reminding people, it's a shaving oil, not a beard oil, so it is for everyone that shaves. And that's why he says it's the best anyone can get.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
Now, the next time you're at a pub quiz and you're asked, who was Iamus, you can shout out that he was the god Apollo's son. Or you could say it's an AI and robotics agri-tech startup because both answers are correct. Based at Nova UCD, which is the hub of innovation-related activities at UCD, Iamus Technologies has developed an autonomous robot tool called Gallus that works within chicken houses to constantly monitor key welfare and environmental variables in the chicken shed. And this allows farmers to make data-driven decisions to improve efficiency and sustainability outcomes, while also improving the biosecurity and animal welfare of the chicken flocks. But before we start talking chickens, I have to ask my next guest, former investment banker Shane Kiernan, co-founder of IAMIS, how the fuck he got into poultry.
Well, I actually like to just think as well about that pub quiz. By the time IAMIS becomes a name, we're going to be a billion-dollar company, so everyone should know the origin of IAMIS by that time. No, but back to my own background, it really was a sort of circuitous path into poultry. I was involved in an agricultural startup in Nigeria, growing tomatoes and helping tomato farmers in very remote Nigeria, basically deliver
no, no,
more.
No. Go back further. You were a posh city banker.
Yeah, well, if we go right back, I guess I did my undergrad in UCD. I did business and law there and then went on to do a Masters of Finance then in London right after that, and went into investment banking with Deutsche Bank as my first job in debt capital markets. Sort of led a path there, then went to work for BlackRock doing real estate private equity. And I mean, I called the top of the market back in 06 with my joining. So
in the worst sense. Oh, not in, you didn't catch it, you caught it.
Yes, I caught it right when everything sort of had reached its peak in terms of valuation, and then sort of fell off from there. But did banking for about 3 years and then caught up in the 08 crisis. And then I guess started my first sort of formal path into entrepreneurial activities. I've always been entrepreneurial though. Like I drew Simpsons pictures when I was six, and even in my secondary school days, I had a tuck shop out of my own locker, which was quickly shut down by the authorities, but that's a different thing. But that first sort of foray into the entrepreneurial world was based on a concept very similar to, I guess, like Groupon or Buy Me, that's now, where we basically helped people shop in Northern Ireland and we would deliver their goods down from there. At that time in 2010, there was a real fall off in the valuation of sterling. So people were shopping up in Northern Ireland a lot, and we just helped people do that.
And you went on to the Gerry Ryan show.
Yeah, the late, great Gerry Ryan. Yeah, what can I say? That man, in a single interview, we had 5,000 emails in a single day. It was transformational for us at the time. But certainly it just gave us a bit of publicity when we really needed it. It was marvelous. It really was good. But I had originally started out in terms of promoting that business, literally handing out leaflets to people coming into the shopping centre in Newry. And someone from the Business Post, I actually handed a flyer to just by chance. And they wrote the first article on what we were doing. And then the researchers and Gerry Ryan picked it up after that. So that was my first, I guess, media exposure on the entrepreneurial world. But then kind of getting through that, I ran that business for about a year and a half. And then had the very fortunate opportunity to go work for President Bill Clinton's foundation in Africa.
I saw that on your CV. Explain.
Yeah, so it was a curious one. You know, obviously Bill Clinton has a connection to Ireland that he holds very strong, and there was a lecture one evening in UCD talking about him and the foundation's work with Irish Aid. I went along to it just sort of out of curiosity, and what I found myself was sort of intrigued by the role that foundation was playing, working with governments throughout Africa and in other nations as well, in really helping them secure resources for their HIV, TB and malaria programs. And where I was sort of curious about it, like my own father's a GP, so I kind of I have, I guess, exposure to healthcare in my background. But I was curious about, because it was the application of people from banking and consulting that were applying themselves in these very different settings and having ginormous impact for literally millions of people. And I guess I sort of, you know, fancied myself from the banking days that I could go and do this and challenge myself. And I went off and kind of made the role myself. So I started myself in Kenya, Nairobi. I won't tell you the whole story because we'd be here for 2 hours.
I love these stories though.
But it was all what came down to me. It was, it kind of, it really amounted to what it takes to get the job done. And it's no different still today in the entrepreneurial world, what I do with IAMIS and everything else. But there was a learnings along the way that you just had to kind of get a moment to get somebody along the way, and you're there.
You're dead right, though. We better get on to IAMIS now in a second. But I have to ask you, did you meet the great Bill Clinton himself?
I did. I actually met him twice. I met him when I was at Harvard as well. But that's again, another okay. story there. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's get back to IAMIS. So where did the IAMIS come from?
Yeah, well, so kind of stepping back and kind of not running too fast through the background, I found myself actually working in the Philippines with another former colleague, and we established a business there. That business today is over 220 people strong. It's a profitable business.
That you still own?
They still own, yeah, still own. I'm the largest shareholder in it. And that business supplies labor to problems that poultry processors and their supply chain partners and contract growers have. So we go in, we clean poultry sheds, we place birds, we vaccinate birds, and we also manage farms.
What's this we, Tonto? Do you go and clean the chicken sheds?
I've done it. Yeah, I've done it myself, and I fully believe you should do it as well.
I love this thing about entrepreneurs is investment banker, son of a doctor, gets into the chicken poo directly, hands in. Yep, love that.
You bet. It was an eye-opener for me because it's an industry that's so ginormous. So 2,000 birds every second are consumed for chicken meat. It's crazy.
Around the world.
So it's a ginormous industry, and that's growing so rapidly in certainly regions like Southeast Asia, Africa as well, where they're expecting to double production over the next 10 years. So with that sort of dramatic increase in protein demand, the producers are really struggling to live up to actually what the requirements are coming from customers. So our company played a gap in doing the management of farms. And I was just so curious, again, kind of background and numbers around why a certain farmer would get a certain result versus the same farmer next door to him, even though they get the same quality of chicks and the same feed, more or less. And out of that, I just kind of said to myself, where's the role of technology to sort of bring this sort of consistency to the production side of poultry raising? And then very fortunately, back here in Ireland, I had a mentor in Vincent Carton from Manor Farm. Vincent and I had a number of conversations over, you know, probably 6 months or so about sort of the challenges in poultry and sort of what they meant to the world to, again, live up to trying to produce double the amount of protein that's required over the next probably 25 years. And it was just so obvious, I guess, to both of us, that there is a major lack of technology applied to this problem. So basically out of that, we created IAMIS.
Which is a robot that keeps an eye on your chickens, basically.
In essence, yeah. In essence, it's more than that in the way that it is a system. And what we're trying to do is kind of take both the passive and active role that the farmer does, and the best farmers do, I should say, in keeping the chickens healthy. And you kind of go back to first principles, like what does a chicken do? A chicken basically eats, drinks, poos, and that's what it does. So your role as a farmer is to try and optimize the conditions for those animals to live up to their genetic potential of turning feed into protein. That's the game of livestock production, really. Like it is quite simple when you take it at that sort of first principles level. And what we're trying to do with IAMIS is bring these different technologies together. So we have a robot that sort of represents what the farmer does and slowly stimulating the activity in the birds. You have a whole host of IoT sensors inside of the barn that capture what's going on in the environment. And we're taking data from those sources and basically coming together with what recommendations do I need to give to you right now that ultimately brings about the best sort of intervention for the birds.
Battery hens only, or free range, or organic, or?
Yeah, so there's a number of terms there that you kind of put together. We're focused on broilers, which are the category of chicken purely for meat. So we're not looking at hens for eggs. We're focused purely on that meat sector. But within that, you have free range and you have different sort of organic. For us right now, it's kind of the conventional birds that are kept inside a very long barn. And for context, a very long barn is 130 meters long, and it's about 15 meters wide.
So it's a football pitch, isn't it?
It's about that. Yeah. So in kind of context, it's five basketball courts long and roughly the same width. So it kind of gives you a sense. It's a huge structure and you can have...
And that's just one.
That's just one.
Yeah.
And that's just one. I'll get onto that. So
and how many of your robots go into just one?
One.
Okay.
So one robot per barn.
So and I'm going to call him a he. Does the robot have a gender?
No.
What do you call them?
We would have it sort of a gender neutral robot, we would describe.
Do you call them Harry or Jackie or Jim or Mary or...
We've had iterations. So, of course, over the 3 years we've been developing the technology, we've had different iterations and they've all had their own sort of pet names or project names along the way. And like we've had Irene, we have Herb, which I guess will be our latest iteration. So we're kind of going along that naming system right now.
I can see the farmer at night saying, "Good night, Irene."
Yeah, well, the intention was with Gallus that they would kind of promote themselves that way. But
I amuse myself no end.
Well, we get all sorts in chicken and we always get chicken and egg and all these other
things. I absolutely said, no, I'm not going to go down there. At least I did say where the flock are you or what the flock got into poultry. However, back to IAMIS. It's a serious business and not alone are you growing and growing and growing, but you're also funding. Talk to me about the funding.
Yeah, well, I'll just go back. So there are... One robot per shed, that's our model. A single shed can have, depending on what size a bird is grown for the customer, you can have birds that are maybe 1.8 kilos going all the way up to 2.5 kilos. So you could have anywhere from typically 30,000 chickens in that size of barn up to maybe 50,000. So these are really huge facilities that are quite difficult and challenging to manage. In an Irish context, typically, poultry farmers have other jobs that they're doing. They could be dairy farmers, they could have pork, they could have something else that they're doing on the side. So the demands on their time are really short. So it's very difficult to spot problems as they're slowly maturing. And really, that's where we come with, is this ability to have nearly that instant insight when it's achievable, when it's available.
What would be a problem?
Very simple, like in a country like Ireland, where you would have quite a big variation, because a chicken shed... When the birds are placed, the temperature could be as high as 36 degrees. So very hot.
Jeez.
And that temperature slowly decreases as the birds age, where they get down to where they might be 24, 25 degrees. But you can imagine on a February morning, you could have, 1 or 2 degrees outside and your chicken shed could be in at 25 degrees. So something very common is that a vent stays open along the side and this creates a cold spot on that particular side of the barn where the birds are. And these are all tiny little things that, of course, the farmers who are attuned and spotted straight away benefit and they get the result in performance. But what IAMIS does is spot all of these little things and then gives alerts as early as even before the farmer knows about them so that they can be corrected. So that brings us back to the opportunity. So that's just one shed and there's 350,000 of these around the world.
Whoa.
So it's a ginormous market, 62 billion chickens a year. Crazy, crazy scale.
And growing.
And growing, yeah. growing to meet that demand that's occurring, particularly in the emerging parts of the world. So IAMIS has been on this sort of growth path now for the last 3 years. We've been in sort of R&D phase. We've been supported by great people along the way, including all of our good friends at Nova, who've been brilliant at UCD.
I forgot to give them their shout out last week, so I'm going to say Nova, UCD, 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 to make sure that they get their proper recognition.
Absolutely, and a whole host of other people as well who we've worked with. But where we are right now is we're at the point where our robots are ready for deployment. We're actually developing our first robot right now that's going to go into a barn next month. And that's the first stage of our MVP getting into our formal customers' hands. So we're at the point now where
MVP, for those who aren't familiar with it, is a minimum viable product. Isn't that it?
That is, yeah, that's it. And we've had many iterations of what we thought was minimum viable along the way as well. But we're at the point now where we're really confident that this solution can be given to customers and we can kind of take really good data from them. And that's kind of at the point now where we see what we need to do over the next 15 months and have sort of looked at a fundraising we need to do right now to kind of allow us to continue to grow.
And how much are you raising?
Yeah, so we're out right now with a round size of about 2 million euros. That's our goal. That's our objective. Still very early days that we're out. So we're only a few weeks into the process. And already the investor interest is really appealing, I think.
And are they coming to you from US, Ireland, UK, where?
All over. Mm-hmm. All over.
Because you've got a team already, haven't you? You've got about seven or something like that working for you, haven't you?
Yeah, five full-time engineers, all based in Nova UCD. And myself, of course. So the engineering team is quite strong. But this is a global product. It's certainly is a global industry, very interconnected all around the world and heavily consolidated. So the top 10 companies control 20% of production. Even 2 weeks ago in the US, Cargill bought two chicken businesses that put them into third in the US from zero. And that's just a theme that's happening right around the world. So we're in that industry where, again, if we go in with our product, we can get to scale very, very quickly. And that's our opportunity that we want to sort of be able and be in a position to execute on.
And I'm sure you're asked this all the time, but are there other people doing the same as you?
There are other people with robots in poultry sheds to different degrees, but they don't do it specifically for broilers in the way that we do it. So we do think we're really quite unique, and we differentiate ourselves, I guess, across three areas. We think our business model, one, is extremely unique. So we don't sell robots. We're not in the business of selling robots. As I told you earlier, my other business in manpower, and that manpower ultimately will be complemented by robots in the future, to the point that instead of where right now it might be one robot for one worker, let's say, in the future you'll have something far less. One robot will be able to do the job of six or seven people in the future. And our business we're in is robotics as a service. So we don't sell a robot. What we do is sell our solution, sell our value to our customer. And we never get in the position of having to kind of come back and try and sell a robot 2 years later.
One of the problems with that, though, is it is a funding business as well. So you have to fund that.
Correct. The good thing is I'm a former debt capital markets banker. And
you may well be, but you still have to find the cash.
Yeah. That's very true. And I think where we're going is we see that as actually a huge opportunity, to be honest. I think where we would be able to have our own robots under our own inventory, manage that really closely, potentially look at other ways of financing that inventory and give that value back to our customers is something that we see is for us a competitive advantage.
I love the hockey stick on the pitch decks always.
Yeah.
The hockey stick being an enormous pickup in sales. You have only just now got your first working or good, excellent robot.
Correct.
How many robots will you produce, and where will you produce them, and how quickly and when, and all those good questions?
Yeah, for us, I think one of the things we've done that's been the biggest benefit we've gotten out of it is our involvement with Techstars in the US, which is an accelerator for startups. And through that program, which coincidentally was co-sponsored by Cargill, who we're working with on a number of things.
And was that just by coincidence? Because that is a magnificent tie-up.
Well, it wasn't a coincidence that we applied, that Cargill was there. More coincidence that I mentioned it now. But to kind of get it, for us, there is a lot of value in the network that accelerator like Techstars brings. And it exposed us to a lot of founders who'd been involved in hardware, building hardware companies. And already we see, there was an announcement last week where Toyota are saying their own supply chain is impacted by chip shortages. We know that's a critical element we will have to meet what we would expect as our sort of delivery of robots in the future.
Are you saying that you're going to have chip problems as well?
Everyone is having chip problems. So it's how you de-risk that for our supply chain. And kind of getting back to where we see our value being created, we expect to have 3,300 robots operational by the end of 2025. That's a lot of robots that need to be produced between now and then.
Where are you going to produce them?
To be determined. I think that's still part of the story post this round.
Shane, you can't just be sitting here in front of me saying you're still determining it. You must know. Well, they may not be manufactured here, but you must have some location.
Yeah.
Korea. So
It will be...
I'm throwing that out. I don't actually know at all.
So for us, it's not about specific regions where it makes sense to be based. We look at where our customer has the right profile. So for example, we're looking at the US market, very big chicken market. So we're likely to have some assembly directly in the US that will take on the US production side. And for customers that are in Asia, it's likely markets like Thailand or Vietnam, where we would have assembly then. But for us, it's about where do we bring the components together? And in the case of what we're doing right now, building all that in Ireland, it's something that we couldn't probably scale in Ireland, just given the expense of putting all of the different components together. I think assembly is a really big side that is kind of consumes a lot of resources when you look at actually the cost of these devices.
It sounds to me like you are going to have to go for a very big funding round sooner rather than later. I know you're funding at the moment, but you're going to have to go for a big one.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's part of our story. Like I was very genuine in thinking that this is a billion euro business, without a doubt. Like we see a path to being at 100 million revenue without actually too much difficulty, considering the size of the market that we're operating in. And no different than some other founders who've gone the path before us in creating sort of big businesses out of Ireland. We see actually that there is a lot of appetite for companies that sort of have that traction and have that trajectory, and we're no different. So kind of raising that type of money, you know, it kind of comes with the territory that we're going to need to be global. We're going to need to find investor base, not just in Ireland, but likely in the US. That doesn't in any way, you know, that really appeals to us actually, you know, because the size of the opportunity is ginormous.
What could Team GBS, our listeners, do for you to help you?
Yeah, like we are raising right now, and that round is certainly has interest from the US. But we do want to speak to people who are interested on the Irish side of investing. We're working with IFAC, who are helping us as well with our raise. So if there's private individuals who think they can help, we would love to have a conversation with anyone who think they would be interested in supporting us.
And they will find you at Nova UCD, and the company is I Am Us. Final question. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Good question. So I guess one thing I'll start off by saying is we wouldn't hire anyone in a heartbeat. So one of the things we're trying to do at IAMIS is really build a good culture around our company and what we're trying to do. So we take it really seriously. Even our last hire, we took, I think, nearly 20 hours as a team to make the decision on that person. And it was the right thing. That person's a great fit. But kind of getting to the point, who would I hire? There is a great resource in the UK who is sort of an authority on animal welfare. It's a lady called Marion Dawkins. She is a superstar in the animal welfare world. And it's someone who, I think for the business that we're in, kind of comes back to IAMIS and taking the signals from birds. It would really allow us to further allow our credentials to develop amongst our customer base, and importantly, their customer base. Because the challenge is that if you're a food processor, are actually coming from the customer level. And the customer is hearing that through Tesco's, through M&S, through McDonald's, and that pressure has been put on to the food companies. And people like Marion are out there doing all the great research actually on what things are best for birds and for livestock. So that's who we would look for.
So Marion Dawkins, you are hired as far as I can see. Shane Kiernan of IAMIS. Anybody who wants to find him will find him at iamis.ai. And thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Connobio at That Great Business Show. ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie.
I advise all our guests that they should make their hire in a heartbeat requests business relevant. So I'm delighted to say that Vikings actor and Trees podcaster David Oakes has been in contact with Pocket Foresters Catherine Cleary and Ash Conrad Jones via Twitter, and they've offered him any job title he'd like, which proves the system can work. And you can hear their plea on last week's episode, episode 48.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
That Great Business Show.
Painting grass. Yes, there's a business in that. Particularly if you're a super talented designer that can paint designs and logos on the pitches for big matches. Jude, spelt J-E-U-D, Ennis, has over 30 years' experience in pitch branding, grass graphics and signage with her company signworks.ie, based in the Knoll in North County Dublin. Her work lies rather than hangs in Crow Park, the Aviva, RDS, Thomond Park, Kingspan, And very recently, she was painting grass in Scotland too. So you see, there's a real business in that. Jude Ennis, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
I always, always looked and look at pictures and wonder who does that. And how do you make those logos kind of stand out like they're in 3D? And it's you.
Yes, it is actually, which is unusual.
In that, did you get into it?
Okay, well, let's start from the beginning. I was in college doing environmental art and design in DIT. I was about 17 or 18 years of age, and my dad had a business that looked after the grounds maintenance and construction of pitches, and he was looking after Croke Park. And he said to me, "Jude, you're in college doing art. Come on, you can give this a go. I've seen it in the States. Can we put a logo, preferably the GAA logo, onto the centre of the pitch?"
Wow.
So I didn't know what to say. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So out I went and I gridded and I painted and I did everything. And lo and behold, the centre of Croke Park started. And the logo, every year then after that, we got to do the logo in the centre.
Fantastic.
And it was thanks to my dad, Nicky Ennis, who's unfortunately passed away 16 years this year, that was the very beginning of it.
And how long does it take to paint the centre of Croke Park with the GAA logo?
I would say, nowadays we have to do it over 2 days. So we'd outline on, if the match was on, say, Sunday afternoon, we'd outline on a Saturday and then we'd come back in on the Sunday and we'd infill. And
in the morning, I presume?
In the morning of the match, make sure.
How early?
Probably around 8 o'clock.
And if it's raining?
We pray it's not.
What happens when it's raining?
When it's raining, it's a little bit more difficult. We have formulas that we make up for paint. So it's not just a specific paint that we use. We formulate it to match with the weather conditions. So we make our formula of the morning of the match to make sure that it will stay.
So you start with the GAA, you start at the top with Croke Park, and how do you expand from there?
Well, we went to a trade show over in the UK. And
who's this wee tonto?
Oh, my dad, sorry, okay. My dad, Nicky and I. And my mum as well, my mum was in the business too. Muriel is her name. But we went over, dad and I, to a show in the UK, and a man from South Africa wanted to meet me because he said, "I've got a great new idea, are you interested?" I was like, okay, come on, tell me. 3D. We can put it onto pitches in 3D.
That's the stuff that I want. Exactly. Now I know.
He said, "I know you've done it. I've seen what you've done in Croke Park. Would you be interested?"
This lad from South Africa has seen your work already.
There you go.
You were chuffed.
So he said, "Would you be interested in looking after Ireland? And I'll look after the UK," he said to me, obviously, "and Europe, but we need somebody in Ireland and we know you can do it. So would you be interested?" And dad and I were looking at each other thinking, this is so exciting. So anyway, we came back and we didn't think too much about it. And we thought, you know, we're not sure if it's going to happen or not. But anyway, down the road, I was setting up my own business then at that stage. And I was looking for my business plan and I was looking for his card, found it. And before I rang him, he rang me to say, "Guess what? We've got a match. We've got a match and we have a potential logo. Are you interested?" So that was the start.
But you were not going to go into signage or sign writing or anything like that?
Not necessarily in the beginning.
You were a designer. You were a clothes designer.
I was. I did clothing and yes, I did fashion. And then I went back and did graphics. So I had a background in graphic design.
Did the clothes not work out or is it just too difficult or...?
I specialised in children's wear and I worked for a company and I wasn't very happy at the time. So I decided to go back and do something else. An eternal student, huh? So
you get into graphics and then, so on to your 3D signage. What was your first match with 3D?
We did Royal Bank of Scotland or Royal Liver Assurance. Sorry, Royal Liver Assurance was the first, I think. Looking back, it's a long time ago now. I'm nearly afraid to say, but it is a long time ago. And we had to make the stencils for it. I gridded a lot by hand for large scale. And that's the way it went from there in the beginning.
And how does it work visually to make me think that it's popping up? And it's got even better more recently. I've just noticed, like it's almost standing out. I'm saying, you know, you'd almost say to the lads, be careful now. You don't tackle over there because you're going to bang into that.
Yeah, we have camera angles. We pick one particular camera and there's a lot of calculations that go into it. And we make stencils. I don't grid by hand, or I do sometimes, but not very often. So it's mostly stencil work. So all the work is done prior to arriving on the pitch so that it's nice and easy. Obviously, stadium managers don't like you walking on their grass. We have to walk.
Do they mind you painting their grass?
Not always. Yeah. But we're okay. We have an environmentally friendly product. So we're, you know, we're really safe.
And when you're done, do you have to then go off and scrub it off again, I presume?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Once the game, it depends on the match, but usually, yes, we do. So we have a team waiting at the back of the stadium to come out with their equipment to remove it.
Are you a one-person band?
Oh, not at all. Well, I am in my own business, signworks.ie, but I work in conjunction with
my... I like the way you got that one out.
Yeah, signworks.ie.
She's selling.
And I work alongside my brothers. I have a John Paul and an Ollie Ennis, and they have a company called sportworks.ie.
And is that a W-O-R-X or
no, K-S. So Signworks, KS, and Sportworks.
And what does Sportworks do?
Pitch construction, maintenance. They have an online shop, still agents. It's worth a look,
you
actually.
You are a real entrepreneurial family.
Now, we are.
Sorry, see, I go off on little tangents here because of things that I hadn't known about you. Let us stick with my little 3D jobby.
Yeah.
So is 3D more difficult to put on than your standard centre of pitch logo?
Well, it's a much larger graphic.
Is that because it has to be for the camera?
Exactly, from the angles. So we have to, it's obviously the calculations are done and the angles are quite long and it can be very distorted looking visually on the ground, but on from camera angle, it's perfect.
And I presume that you get paid even more for a 3D logo.
Possibly.
So you love those.
I do.
But if you are, say, how many people are working in the pitch signage business?
So we'll say with my brothers and I, and we have a good lot of crew. So we could have up to 20 people.
Okay. That's a solid business.
Yeah, it's
and you're up in Scotland, and do they all travel up there or do you have people up there for you or?
Yeah, well, no, we actually traveled over four crew. We can turn around three logos in 2 to 3 days with four crew. So that's
and
what
do
we
do. You, when you say four crew, how many cars are involved? I presume that you, do you truck it up or?
We get couriers. And we'll get the couriers to send over all the equipment we need.
And we're talking about gallons and gallons of paint.
Yeah,
or?
A good lot. And then we have to mix our formula before we apply it to the pitch.
Okay. So, and are we talking about, when you say paint, you're not talking about house paint?
Oh, absolutely not. Oh, no. It's actually, I suppose you could call it a line marking fluid or a product, but most people don't understand that, so that's why I call it a paint.
And have you got a problem then with the time of year? Because matches invariably happen in drier, warmer times, not in the middle of winter, which possibly is good, but it means that there's a lull, is there? Or what do you do during those lull times?
Okay, so we'll say we have Autumn International starting now. So this starts as a busy season. Luckily, Croke Park, I might be doing some work there next Sunday week, which I'm very happy about for the ladies.
Are you not chosen for all of them? You're not their go-to for every match, no?
Oh, I would hope so.
Oh, good. Yes. Okay, yeah.
During the winter time, we're quite busy. And then, obviously, not so busy then for summer, for me particularly. So I have my other side line or my other string to my bow, which is signage. So I manufacture signs or shop fronts or any sort of branding to do with signage.
And I'm going to stick with the grass painting. If 2, 3, 4, 5 people ring you to looking for the thing on the same day, there are only so many. It's only one of you. I mean, at the end of the day, or have you other designers or have you?
Yeah, there's three of us in the family. So Ollie, JP and I. So we are all able to
They can do the designs.
Oh, absolutely. Although
must
they
be
can
dead
do the painting.
Easy, sorry.
No. It's years and years and years of.
And what is the most difficult thing that you do on the grass? Because, like, I know what signs look like, but on grass, yeah?
The most intricate type of logos we've done in the past, there could be a lot of shading, there could be a lot of different types of graphics that are very small and distorted, things like that.
You know, marketing managers go nuts to make sure that the colour of their logos are the correct colours. She's smiling benignly and knowingly. Have you had a lot of difficulties over the years with people saying that's the wrong colour blue or red or whatever?
Well, no, because I make sure it's the correct colour before we get out onto the pitch.
But you're painting onto green.
Correct.
And it could rain, as I mentioned, or maybe even sun could distort it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, rain does. And we have an issue with rain, obviously, because it'll wash it down into the ground. So we can't...
And is that a bad thing? Does that wreck their grass or their ground?
Oh, absolutely not. No. We use environmentally friendly products, so we've no issues with that end of it. We do have issues with the fact that the logo will look a lot more faint than it should do.
And does that mean a phone call and you're not allowed to go out at halftime and touch it up?
No, I have a lot of, we'll say there's a grounds person and there is a sponsor and me in the middle. And there's a lot of camera angles and chats. but we do our best.
But no camera shots of you talking to the brand manager?
No.
Animatedly. How big can it go? Or are you trying to grow?
No, I think I'm happy with the way I am for the moment. However,
You're happy because you more or less have a stranglehold on this.
I wish. No, I tell you what, I would love to start painting. And we discussed this before in Dubai. I'd love to start going to Europe. There was, up until, we'll say a couple of years ago, there was a copyright on 3D that we couldn't do it ourselves.
Because of the South African guy, is
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Okay.
So we had an issue and I distorted a logo once for Electric Ireland in Athlone for an under 20s match and I got into a lot of trouble.
Did you say you distorted?
Correct. I distorted it.
What does that mean?
So we'll say the logo, it comes in, you know, a square format. Yeah. I distorted it to make it look like 3D.
Okay. And Colleen Donna?
Yes.
And Mr. South Africa found out about this?
Yes, unfortunately.
How the hell would he find out about it?
Well, you won't believe it. You will not believe it. Some fellow was on holidays for the weekend at a stag weekend and happened to be looking at RTE and spotted it and got onto the guys in South
Small
Africa.
World.
I know, isn't it?
So anyways, have you now sorted all these problems?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
What was the solution? Do you now own 3D... painting or
well,
you can only own it.
No, you can't. We could technically paint 3D ourselves, so it's fine. We always did. Say
what do you do that he had a hold on that, you know, that you couldn't just go ahead and paint?
Oh, he had the copyright and the patent of the actual 3D painting on a surface of grass, we'll say. It's very complicated. Don't ask me anymore because it's too complicated.
That sounds weird. It's like saying, you know, I have a copyright on painting my house or something.
It is strange, yeah. But
so anyway, it is there, but it is now gone.
Yes, as far as we know. So that's where...
That's not a very legal answer because he'll probably be listening to this podcast. He says, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, let's hope. Fingers crossed that we can expand and we can get a little bit more.
And you
work.
Said that you'd love to go to Dubai. Why Dubai particularly? Yeah. Just because it's sunny or?
Well, I just think I've been to Dubai before actually, but I'd love to go there to work.
Okay, yeah. Why not? What about Twickenham? What about the other big Wembleys? You haven't cracked those ones yet?
Not yet, no. They are looked after by a UK company. They look after the branding for
Could
the pitches.
Could you muscle in on them?
Possibly.
Is it a but price issue? Hardly. I mean, it can't be a massively expensive thing, is it?
Yeah, I can't answer the question fully because there's a lot of complications to it.
Try me. I'm always interested in people's businesses. What would the issues be? Like they have arrangements with the FA or with the Rugby Football Union or whatever?
Yeah, I would say so. And
they never tender. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, they don't seem to tender our way as much as I'd like.
Okay.
Unfortunately. But
okay. I'm sure of course, they're out of the EU because there would have been a time where the EU might have had a look at that. Where else would you like to go?
I suppose all of Europe and the States. Why not? Go everywhere.
But you can't. You see, this is my point, is that you are a one-person operation, really, or three people even.
Yeah.
So if there's one of you, say, doing Augusta National, one of you is doing the All-Ireland, one of you is doing the Autumn Internationals, whatever, that's not going to happen.
It'd be very difficult, but don't worry, we can train people in.
Yeah,
you know, we have a good crew behind us, so we could possibly.
So, you know that we always ask what Team GBS could do for you. What could we do for you?
I suppose we'll put me in touch with like-minded people or people who are who are in the industry.
Like-minded people. A dress designer or a baby's clothes designer who decided to go painting painting grass. Okay.
In the sporting area. Like you were telling me about the company who's...
Up in Sligo, yes. SIS.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, we would. But you're already, as I mentioned, you're in Crow Park, the Aviva, the RDS, Thomond, Kingspan. You were up with the American ambassador. You were in Argyllan Castle. You're not exactly shy of locations. There must be, is there a finite number of things that you could do? No?
No, I don't see. There's always another opportunity and there's always something for branding. I'm looking at golf clubs at the moment. I have branded golf clubs for open days and things like that.
Is that affordable? Can't figure out.
Oh, yeah.
Are you expensive or are you...
Budget-wise, it depends on... Like, obviously, international rugby matches are a completely different ballgame to a local club that want to advertise or put up their logo for a specific competition they have.
You mean you can charge way more for the big matches? Yeah? I presume that the demands are much, much, much bigger for the internationals.
Yes, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So, actually, I must ask you before I forget it. On the internationals or any other one of those, you know, when the fellas decide to travel along on the ground and they get themselves covered, does that really cheese you off? I was going to use another word.
Yeah.
When they actually remove your paint and they put it onto their kit.
And the kit man goes crazy. Yes, it's not great. I do. I watch all the matches and I stand up screaming at the TV.
But not for the teams.
No,
stay, stop. Don't go near. But you also presume, because I know I have a background in TV production and stuff, and I know that those TV angles are very important.
Yeah.
And you know who's the worst one? French. Do you ever see them with product placement? You have a bottle of Coca-Cola and they zoom in on it. That's amazing, isn't it? I wonder who got paid for that.
Exactly.
So back to the somebody who's listening who would love to brand their golf club for an open day or for Captain's Day or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that expensive?
No, not too expensive. It depends on their budget.
Hundreds or thousands?
Hundreds.
Really?
Yes.
That's not bad.
But depending on size and intricacy of logos and things like that. But it's very doable.
Affordable.
For clubs. Exactly.
Okay. So, sorry, I went back to you. You were going to introduce you to SIS up in Sligo because I've had him on a previous radio show twice, I think. A very nice man. Who else would be of interest to you? What are the big stadiums or stadia, if you want to be proper, in Ireland that you're not in? Anybody there? Windsor Park, have you done that yet?
No.
Up in Belfast, no?
Not. Oh, actually, yes, we have done Windsor Park.
Okay.
I think...
You've probably covered all of Ireland, have you?
I would say so. And even cricket.
Okay.
Cricket grounds. We've, over the years, like it's all over 30 years that I've been...
And what is
painting.
The introductory method? Who introduces you to whom? Who's the key person? The door, the gatekeeper, as they say.
Well, we'd say the sponsor will contact us and say, look, we're coming up with a match or... whatever they have, an event, would you be interested in quoting for this? So that's the start of it. And then I'd go meet up with them, go and have a look at the
venue. You get all the big ones, so you must quote very well.
Oh, I'm sure we do.
Is there competition in Ireland? Have you got other people, you know, the people that you hate?
Well, there are sometimes, there are people who paint logos on pitches, but I don't know them and they might do one or two. But when you're over 30 years in the industry,
Love it.
You know.
You are the queen, is what you're saying. the queen of signs. We have one final question that we always ask every guest, and that is, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Could I pick two?
Of course you can. You've gone way beyond that. Yeah.
I'd like Robbie Keane, number one, and I'd like Paul O'Connell, number two.
Is that just because you like them? Because they have to be relevant to your business.
No, they would be. They're both in the sports industry. I think Robbie Keane is fantastic. He also looks after the Irish guide dogs. He's an ambassador for them. And I've puppy walked for the guide dogs as well. And Paul O'Connell, because he's in, he'd have fantastic contacts in rugby and the IRFU. And I'd love to play golf with him.
Okay.
In Balbriggan, a golf club.
Paul O'Connell, you're not being hired in the heartbeat. You're hired for a round of golf, as far as I can make it. And Robbie Keane. Okay, well, we'll see whether we can organise that for you. I better get on to my pal and the former co-presenter here, Jamie. Jamie Heaslip-Peel, obviously would know Paul rather well.
Oh, I've met Jamie.
There you go. What a gentleman. What a nice man he is too.
Absolutely lovely. Yeah. And he was at the, when I was painting in the American Ambassador's residence, we were invited to the 4th of July celebrations. And that's where I met him.
There you go.
I even have a photo with him.
Jude Ennis. And signworks.ie. And what do you call the grass signage business? Is that grasssignage.ie, you know?
No, sportworks.
Sportworks.ie. Okay. Okay, very good. Thanks so much for coming in to us. And we'll be able to look at your handiwork in the next couple of weeks as well.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Great story. Now, you may remember a few weeks ago, we had Malcolm Murray of Sky TV in with us talking about their free offer to small businesses to have a TV ad on TV for the first time. And as we do, we did follow up and they've just released the list of 10 businesses who will feature on Sky on the run-up to Christmas. And they are Louis Copeland, Baby Elegance, Macaulay Pharmacy, Inua Hotel Group, Golden Bake, Aliso, Kylemore House, Tri Equestrian, Craft Butchers of Ireland and Tours America. And I'm going to make it my business to see whether I can have some or all of those on That Great Business Show in the coming weeks. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 49. As always, Buíochas mór to the team here at the Dublin Podcast Studios, home of Ireland's best podcast sound engineers. Station manager Peter Rice will no doubt be after Jude Ennis's for a sign to tell the world that the Dublin Podcast Studios are fully open for business if you're planning on making podcasts. And making podcasts is what Team GB does best, makers of the world-class podcast like That Great Business Show, and also our podcast for the Love Irish Food brand. Talk to us about your podcast requirements. And we only use the best, like today's studio sound engineer, Rob Curry, who makes us the best-sounding podcast around. And we also want your ads. We're delighted to have Izmi on board nowadays. So if you want to talk to Ireland's SME community, That Great Business Show is the way to do it. And my thanks this week to Neil Hughes, who contacted us about the New Companies Act. The ever-obliging Micheál Whelan at Nova UCD recommended the Chicken Whisperers at IAMIS. And the man who remains Ireland's biggest earner, Bob Hamilton, makers of the classiest Irish urns, told us we had to have Jude on. How right he was. And if you know of a great business that should be featured on Ireland's Best Business Podcast, please do not hesitate. Tell us all about it on our website, thatgreatbusinessshow.com, or via our LinkedIn page, where we have great conversations with past, present and future guests. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for just a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. And so, from me, Conal O'Moran, until next week, Slán tomhán.